Welcome to HeCast, the official podcast of He Changed It. As always, I am Mike Chisholm. As always, I am your host for this discussion that we will have in the realm of men's mental wellness. As always, we have a very interesting guest today to talk about mental wellness and how that has gone into his journey and been a part of his journey and is shaping his journey as to where he's at right now. If you haven't downloaded He Changed It, what the heck are you waiting for? Head on over to the Google or the Apple Store, download the He app, search He Changed It. You will find it immediately. And if you wouldn't mind, please, please subscribe. Please, please share this podcast. We would really appreciate that. The He Changed It overlords would then stop getting on my back about getting numbers and metrics and all of that fun stuff. Let's blow this thing up. Let's make the world a better place for men. Let's create the number one resource out there for men who are going through stuff, this thing that is called life. I am so excited to do this. It's the highlight of my day when I get to do one of these podcasts, and I get to do two of them today. So I'm very excited about this. Now, as the audience that has grown so far with us knows, I am a gigantic hockey fan. In fact, when I'm a fan of something, I really get into it, no matter what it is. And hockey is one of those things that I've chosen to get into from a very, very young age. We've had former NHLers on here in the past. We have another one today. I'm excited about that. I'm not even going to hold against him that he was a Vancouver Canuck at some point, but he was a Vancouver Canuck. More than that, though, he grew up in the same area that I grew up. He played for Vernon, the Vernon Vipers junior hockey club. He faced adversity early on in his life and has taken that adversity and sprungboard it. Sprungboard, is that a word? I'm not sure. But he has used it to springboard himself into a place where his career is over, but that does not mean he does not know where he is going. He has 100% taken the things that he has learned and is using those things to teach others. It is awesome to have you here. Aaron Volpatti, thank you for taking time out of your busy, busy day. You got a lot of plates spinning. I know that. Thank you for taking time out to be on HeCast today.
Yeah, Mike, thanks a lot. Thanks for having me. And yeah, excited to chat.
This is great. Okay, so you were an NHLer until when? When did your NHL career officially end?
2015.
Yes. You were done. And so you were with the Caps at that point, right?
It was, yeah.
And it wasn't your choice to end the career. It was the biology of the way things happen in that game sometimes. You had a neck injury?
I did. I had a neck injury the previous season and then got the surgery. And I mean, for those of everyone following the Jack Eichel thing, so I had the fusion surgery the year prior and tried to come back and it wasn't doable.
Yeah, so. I'm a pro wrestling guy and had a pro wrestling promotion and stuff, and I know some of the people in that world, and that's kind of that last resort surgery. Yeah. A lot of wrestlers get that fusion surgery done and you don't know what's going to happen on the other side of the rehab on that thing. And did you try and come back after it?
Oh yeah. Yeah, wow. I went into that surgery, you know, retirement wasn't an option. It was we're coming back. And I ended up coming back around Christmas that following year. Like I got the surgery in, I think it was May of 14, came back around Christmas, and I knew right away it wasn't, you know,
something unright.
It was really, really stiff and I had a lot of issues. But for me, you know, I knew if I didn't play, my career was over. So I'm like, I'm going to give this, you know, the best shot I can, because if I don't play, I'm done. Like, you know,
so you fought right to the finish line.
I did. Yeah. Literally and figuratively, I guess. But, I got to the point where I could barely get out of bed the next day. And I'm, you know, I really had to have a serious conversation with myself and be like, you know, I don't want a life changing injury per se.
Yeah.
If I have to, you know, if I get another fusion, I definitely don't want to go down that road. And anyways, met with doctors and, they just said you can't play how you are now.
Yeah.
And nothing's changed a lot. The technology's changed, and that's why you're seeing, you know, different guys try different procedures.
But
I got nothing against the fusion, and the doctor was great. I have no bad things to say. And, you know, these things just sometimes happen, and that was that.
You know, I appreciate the attitude that you have here, because you talk about, you're saying that was that, you know, oh, it is what it is. These things happen. But you're saying that about a fucking professional hockey career going down and having that attitude. is something that was given to you as a gift early on in your career, early on in your junior hockey career, things starting to take off for you, had a massive injury as a teenager.
I did. Let me go back and I guess I'd say correct you there, where I have that attitude now.
Yes.
I didn't have that then, though.
Okay.
So there's the difference, right? I've learned. It doesn't seem like it's been almost, 6 years, but it seems like it's been a couple years.
Yeah.
It took a while to get to that point. You know, you lose that identity like we had chatted earlier, right?
Yeah.
So that was a big thing for me, was just, you know, coming to terms with it. And because it's a bit of like fear of like, what do I do now? Right. Yeah. And being, you know, a little bit angry and pissed off that, you know, it didn't go the way you planned. But I had already had experience with that. And you mentioned the burn injury. I don't know how much time we got, because I can get nitty gritty with the burn injury.
Well, let's paint the picture of what it is without necessarily going into all the details of it. Because at the end of the day, if there are echoes that continually come to you through your life, and I don't want to put words in your mouth, but adversity is what made you stronger.
Absolutely.
And was that at that time when you had the burn, was that the biggest adversity that you had in your life up to that point?
Definitely.
Yeah. And how old were you?
I was 19, almost 20.
Playing junior hockey competitively.
Playing junior hockey. So that's a good segue. We'll go right into it. But I mean, I guess I'll preface it with like, yeah, my life growing up was, man, it was, I have no bad things. I had an awesome childhood. My family was, you know, super tight, super close knit. Like we lived in a little trailer court and we just, you know, we just had no worries, really. I didn't anyways.
Yeah.
My parents both worked a lot and, you know, they were awesome. And my sister and I are super close. And yeah, so I dealt with some like bullies and stuff that all kids kind of go through. And yeah. I was a really tiny kid and nothing major. And then this hit. So I was in my second year in Vernon.
Yep.
And, you know, my dream was always to get a scholarship to the States, right? In NCAA.
Yep.
But the thing
it wasn't to play pro hockey? Was that as well?
That's what I tell everyone. I wasn't that good.
Yeah.
I really wasn't. I was just good enough.
Yep.
And I don't know if you've read Malcolm Gladwell's books, but I read that and he references the Beatles with the 10,000 hour thing. And mm-hmm. he's like, you know what? The Beatles actually weren't that good, really. They'll be the first to tell you that. They got an opportunity to play at this club and I can't even remember where, little dive bar.
Yeah.
And they just played for 12 hours a day all the time. And they were just good enough to get an opportunity. And then it's like, well, what do you do when you get that?
Yeah.
That was me.
And those are two things right there. Are you going to put in the work that it takes to get good at something? And then also, will you be able to recognize and actually walk through the door of opportunity that comes up every once in a while?
Yeah. And so I'm not John Lennon, but you know, I really resonated with that because, you know, I really, again, like I wasn't that good. I just got these opportunities. I played junior B in Revelstoke. Like I could always hit and skate. I wasn't the most skilled guy, but that's what
you could hit and skate.
That's what I could do. And through that came some fighting, right?
Yep.
With some of these hits I was delivering, like I could hit through a person and, you know, guys like Tutu that we used to see, like I was like more like that where, you know, could really hit guys and start hurting guys. And then you have to fight. So anyways, going back. So I really wasn't that good. Like I made the Vernon Vipers at 18. So I graduated high school in Revelstoke, played junior B, went to Vernon the next year at 18. Scored
championship team too, right? Like that team.
We were really good.
Yeah.
We were definitely like top three in Canada every year I was there.
So there was a real high caliber program.
Really high caliber. Yeah. So the first year we were pretty stacked and I had my role fighting, hitting. And again, I scored one goal and that's what I tell people. Like, and you asked if pro hockey and I'm like, pro hockey was not even on my radar. Like I hadn't even thought about it.
Were you a huge fan?
That wasn't an option.
No, not even close.
Nah, I wasn't that good. And that's what I tell people.
Were you a hockey fan?
Oh, I was definitely a hockey fan.
Who did you love? What team did you love?
I love Vancouver.
You were a Canuck fan.
Yeah. Well, especially as a young kid in the 90s.
Yep.
Right.
Yeah.
The Pavel Bure, Linden, all these guys.
Yep.
So yeah, I was definitely a Canucks fan. So going into my second year in Vernon, you know, I had graduated a little bit, maybe playing like third, fourth line, playing a little more minutes. But again, like I finished that year and I still hadn't talked to a single school. I was almost 20 years old.
Wow.
So, you know, for me, I had one more year. So that season ended and I'm like, I got one more crack at this to, you know, I got to add that other layer to my game, the offensive stuff, because I could always hit and skate and fight. But that got derailed with this injury. So we were out doing our, you know, partying after the season like we did.
Yep.
And we were camping. And I mean, I won't get into the nitty gritty, but I was a little bit reckless. I shouldn't say a little bit. I was a lot reckless.
Yep.
And, you know, just thought you're invincible like a lot of young men, maybe teenagers do.
Yep.
And that was definitely me. And I was a pyro. Like I loved messing with fire and gas and I was an idiot with it. And it really backfired. So I had, you know, like a Molotov cocktail.
Yep.
So I filled wine bottles up with gas.
Oh boy.
Put the lids back on them and I would set them in the fire and then they would just.
Yeah.
It would be like a 40, 50 foot flamethrower. And that's what I did to get a rise. And
yep.
Be the life of the party, right? Anyway, so I was walking around that night and I had a sweater on and the two bottoms of the bottles hit. So I had about a liter and a half of gas on myself. And, you know, I knew, obviously, I was drunk. You can see where it's going. But I wasn't, you know, I knew I had spilled gas on myself and I knew there was a fire there. But
yeah.
To this day, I don't know why I'm like, I smell like gas. So I went to, I pulled my sweater off. What I thought was a safe distance from the fire. What I would later learn was like those fumes, you almost like it settles low and there's just this big cloud of fumes around you. Right.
Oh, man.
And so I went to throw my fire in, which at a safe distance, what I thought kind of gave it a kick and just blew up basically. And yeah, I mean, I'll save you the details of you know, going through that, but I wasn't in pain. That was the weird thing. It was so much shock, right?
Yeah.
There was panic.
I can imagine there was.
The problem with me is I was fast, so I took off. And I talk about this in my book, and it was such an out-of-body experience. Yeah. Like, I just bolted. I think it's the fight, flight, right? Like, I can't fight the thing. So naturally, I just took off.
Yeah.
There was no water, no grass. Like I was.
So you took off into like the bush?
I just started running.
Wow.
And rolling around, get up running again because you can't just like put out a gas fire. Like, so eventually I had no clothes left. And, you know, yet people ask me how long we're on fire for. I'm like, maybe 30 seconds. Like, I don't really know. So the guys were chasing me and finally they tackled me. And had to smother it to get the fire out. So they had their coats and these guys all burnt their arms and their hands. I remember sitting there on the cooler after in total shock. And I just remember like looking at people's faces. People were crying, panicking. And I didn't really like understand to what degree I had, you know, really fucked myself up here.
Yeah.
And I just remember looking at myself and like there's just giant piles of skin. And I just like, I basically started skinning myself. Like it was really, really gross.
Wow.
And anyway, so long story short, we're out of service. We're at, you said you grew up in like Vernon area.
Yeah.
Yep. So we're up at Blue Nose Mountain.
Yep.
Which is, you know, 30 minutes, maybe quite a bit up there.
Yeah, you're out. You're
no
out
service. Of, yep. And luckily one of the guy's girlfriends was able to drive. So we made it down to the hospital 30 minutes later. And then the shock had started wearing off. And like, let me tell you, that's something I'll never forget pain wise. I hope I never go through something like that again. So I got airlifted to Vancouver that night, woke up full mummy, you know, and, you know, things started coming back to me. And that's really where the journey started on the recovery. When I woke up that morning in Vancouver, spent 6 weeks, was way shorter than I was supposed to spend there. I mean, I'll maybe send it back over to you, but I had an epiphany, I would say 2 weeks into my stay there. Hockey was over as I knew it.
As far as you,
Well, I was told that.
Wow.
That, not that it was over, like our season, it was in 4 months, right?
Yeah.
Because you know, you asked if we were a good team. We were number one in Canada, I think, that year, and we got upset by Surrey in the finals.
Right.
I got suspended in the finals. I forgot about that, but that's another story. Like back then, you had to pretty much murder someone to get suspended in the finals.
Junior final.
So yeah, I didn't play for a few games, but anyways, we lost and got upset, and so our season was in 4 months, and the doctors. I remember asking the doctor, you know, in that burn unit, well, what about hockey? And I remember his face still. He's like, I can just tell, like, this poor kid thinks he's going to play hockey in 4 months. He's just like, listen, you're going to be in here for a while. You got a long recovery. So I was 40% second degree burns. So I have grafts like on my stomach and legs and all that. Yeah, and I accepted that because, I mean, I was just really thankful I was going to make a full recovery.
Yeah.
You know, the first few days, like, I wouldn't say my life was in danger by any means. I mean, I'm really lucky that night could have been a lot worse, you know? So,
yeah.
Yeah, like, yeah, you want to talk about life being in
danger. It's a miracle that you're here.
It could have been.
Yeah, absolutely.
For sure. So, thankfully, you know, I had guys that were able to catch me eventually and put me out, but... Yeah, so I mean, your perspectives, you know, really shift with experience like that. So
was it a wake-up call that you needed to have at that age?
Yeah, it might have been.
Like, you and I are both really into manifesting. We're both very much into carving our own destiny and going for what it is, finding our purpose and trying to live in that. And like I even said that, I don't do this professionally. I'm in the finance business. But the fact that my wife is building this app, this feels like it's my purpose. And it doesn't feel like work ever. We love manifesting. You and I are very similar in that regard. But I had to have an epiphany before that kind of happened for me, that I started going down the road of personal development and all of that.
Yeah.
Was that epiphany that you had a couple weeks in the start to where leading to where you are now?
Like,
was
that 100%?
It grew you up real fast.
Yeah. Well, and so, I mean, going back to your first point there, was that something I needed to, like, as a kick in the ass?
Yeah.
I don't know if I would say that, but I would tell you 100% that I would have never gotten to where I got to without that, for sure. Absolutely not.
Wow.
So, I mean, maybe that's just me being stubborn and saying I didn't need the kick in the ass. I didn't need a kick in the ass in the sense that I had that drive naturally.
Yeah.
And that was the way I was brought up. You know, do something, go do it with, you know, all your heart.
Yeah.
And, you know, you want something, but what are you going to do? They're really, you know, it's, and that's what I say now. Like, I don't believe in goals really, because it's like everyone has goals.
Yeah.
They're a wish usually. Do you actually go out and do
until
something?
Until there's a plan in like, place to achieve to that. It's a fantasy, right? It's, yeah.
So circling back there, maybe it was a kick in the ass. Either way, I wouldn't have gotten to where I got to without it.
Isn't that amazing? Because you
ended adversity,
up.
Adversity, right?
You, well, it's the adversity that hits you and you start recovering and you did want to go to college. You know, that was still obviously there. Shit. You know, now it's even harder for me to get that. You end up going to Brown, right?
Yeah. So, I mean, that'll circle into this epiphany I had. Yeah. So, here I am 2 weeks in. It's a bit of a mixed bag of emotions because on one hand, I'm super depressed. I'm in a shitload of pain.
Yeah.
Like a burn injury is not a fun injury on the daily. You know, you're hopped up with morphine, but what I tell people is it's like getting tattooed for 24 hours a day, you know, like it's just, and I mean, the days that I would have to go into like the shower room, they called it the debriding room, where they would like skin you alive with a high powered jet. Like you coming out of that and it's not fun. But anyways, so aside from the pain, you know, I was pretty down. Like, again, like I wanted to get a scholarship and I have to forfeit this last year of hockey. Right. Yeah. But I'm going to go live a pretty normal life. So in my head, I'm like, you know, I'll go get the girl and I'll start a family. And
so you were already grateful. You already had some elements of gratefulness back then.
Totally.
We know what a superpower gratefulness is.
Yeah.
And you had that through that experience without ending up being able to do some of the things you wanted to do. You still had that gratefulness at that point, just for being alive.
Yeah, I did. But there was that still lived in me that disappointment down there. So it was tough to balance those, to be honest. Yeah. But yeah, like I was going to make a full recovery and I could go, I was like, well, I can still go to school. I can go get a whatever job. And I was okay with that. I really was. And then 2 weeks into my stay, my coach calls me from Vernon and he says, you know, hey, how you doing? And I said, well, not very good.
Yeah.
But I'm hanging in there, waiting for this graft surgery, right? That ended up getting kind of pushed back a little bit, but and he's like, I just got off the phone from one of the assistant coaches at Brown University and they're looking for, you know, a certain type of player. And his exact words were the coach at Brown was like, we're looking for a guy that can put the fear of God into the defenseman of the Ivy League. And that's what I did. Right. And my coach was like, well, I got the perfect guy for you. There's just one problem. He's in the burn unit in Vancouver. And so he says to me, he's like, just call him, just give him a call. So
I
called the assistant coach from Brown and I never heard a Rhode Island accent at the time. He's awesome though. He's just full of energy. He's just like, well, Patty, what's up, brother? Like, what the hell did you do? And anyway, so we just started chatting and he's like, listen, I know the future's uncertain, which was an understatement at the time. He's like, we just hope you get better. We'd love to see you play one day if it was possible. And I was kind of like, okay. And so I hung up the phone and I was really emotional because I'm like, I've worked 20 years to get this opportunity.
Yeah.
Like, again, I always just kind of snuck up the leagues and the ranks and just, I needed just a little opportunity and here it was. And now I'm, you know, I've done this to myself and I've been told that it's not possible. And I just remember I started asking questions. I'm like, well, why can't I do it? Because, okay, here's this big, long list of why I can't play. The skin grafts are going to be too limiting.
Yep.
The risk of infection is going to be too high. You can't sweat properly when you have that much skin grafts. You know, your body can't really perspire, yep. Right? Because you burn through everything. Those third degree burns, those deep ones, there's nothing left. And, you know, there's just this long list of things. I'm going to be in a bodysuit for 2 years, going to be stiff. You know, I could maybe play hockey in a couple years for fun, but yeah, like there's this big long list and I'm just like, I start going through and I'm like, well, I've been through a lot of pain already. Yeah. Can't be worse than that. So yeah. I just basically said like, fuck that.
Yep.
Like that's, I made a choice and it was really empowering just to be like, no, like I was legit willing. I was like, I'll die before I give up that dream.
How powerful is it to make a choice?
Oh man.
Like that is one of those things that
really
so many
is.
People, oh my God.
Yeah,
people live in this sea of anxiety and they just, and it's all because they haven't made a choice. And once they make a choice, everything starts to get better. Guys who go through divorce because they're miserable and they just prolong the misery. Totally. But then the choice happens, whether it's made for them or they choose to fight for it, whatever it is. How powerful is it to make a choice?
It was crazy powerful. And so,
and you learn that at such a young age. What a blessing that.
Well, that's exactly what we said, right?
Wow.
What adversity really can do for you if it's framed the right way.
Yeah.
And the growth you can have through adversity is like beyond your wildest dreams. Really, it really is. Yeah. So for me, I made that choice that night. I'm like, no, this is what I'm doing. I'm gonna go get that scholarship. Like, try and stop me. Like, I don't care if you're a doctor. I didn't care. And so this is where the visualization came in, because like I tell people, my mind was all I had. I was bedridden. I couldn't move. Like I didn't get wheeled around in my wheelchair till like week four or something in that hospital.
Wow.
Or maybe week three. But so my mind was all I had. And so I thought, well, what can I do now? And I started visualizing like healing. I started just like, I was always a science guy. I was really interested in biology.
And, yeah.
People ask me like, well, how did you come across visualization? And I'm like, I didn't have any other choice. Like,
right.
I had nothing else to think about other than the negative shit I was going through.
Yeah.
Well, now I'm going this way. So I'm not going that way. And so I just started visualizing like, you know, I mean, like I believe in my heart that I healed faster because of this visualization. And I think it was also that choice of like, I mean, my mind, there's always doubts there. There's always going to be doubts.
Yep.
But I think it was like, well, we better get on board here because this crazy bastard isn't stopping.
Yeah.
Right. And I believe that.
Are you a David Goggins guy?
Yeah, I like some of his stuff.
That's where he goes. Like, he's like, okay, yeah, body, I'm doing this. And no matter what happens, you better get on board with the program here. Yeah. And there's something to that, isn't there?
There is. You know what? People have asked me that before. I do like his stuff. I think it's good.
He's a savage, though. He's
hardcore. He's a savage, but I also think, like, you know, I also like love spending time with my family.
Yeah.
And I'm not here to call him out and like, no, if he does that, but like, if that's your priority and your purpose, like,
sure,
yeah, man, go for it. At the time, yeah, I would say resonated with that for sure. Like, that's what I needed to do is that's it.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Anyway, so I would go back to the visualization stuff of like, I would see myself playing that fall, going to Brown, signing my commitment letter. Like, that's all I thought about. And it worked, which is the crazy thing. And, I mean, there's a big gap in there.
Sure.
Of, you know, like,
I did the work along the way to get there. The visualization was great,
yeah,
but you also did the work and you didn't accept no's that were yeah, given to you.
No, I didn't. Well, right? Well, and there was a lot of no's, and like, my body was basically fighting back that whole next 4 months. It was like, it was begging me to stop. Like, I had kidney stones the day after I got out of the hospital.
Oh my God.
I had an appendectomy 10 days before camp that year.
What?
And they had to cut through my skin graft to get it. So I remember going to the hospital and like, I couldn't walk for the first, I would say, 6 weeks after the hospital. Because every time I stood, the blood would rush to my legs and they'd bleed out through my grafts.
Oh my God.
So the doctors are like, you got to really monitor that and just wait until that heals a little bit more, because that, you know, that blood will just rush.
You had every reason to quit.
I had every reason to quit. And like, every that appendectomy 10 days before camp, and I was on the ice like a few weeks before for the first time, thinking like, holy shit, the doctors were right. Like, I can barely move and it hurts.
Oh my God.
And then I get this appendectomy,
yep,
through my skin graft. And I remember meeting with the team doctors and, you know, the coaches.
Is this still Vernon or is that Brown?
This is
now?
Still Vernon.
So still Vernon.
I haven't got the scholarship. This is my last year of junior.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And they're, I honestly don't think they would have played me if they didn't know what I'd gone through. Because like, I was not in a good spot. Like, I was in a lot of pain. I just had this appendectomy surgery.
Okay.
And anyway, so long story short, I play the home opener 10 days or a week after this surgery. And I start playing pretty well. But this is when you could get shot up with every painkiller you wanted.
Yep.
So I was getting lit up every night just so I could go out and play.
Yep.
I started getting this like weird pelvis issue where like my burns were so fresh that there was just like, I went muscled like very deep. Right. So there was this imbalance. I think no one knew what it was, but I could like barely walk to the rink. I was on crutches walking to and from the rink, but I knew that Brown was, they were coming to watch me.
The scouts in November. Yeah, absolutely.
I'm like, I'm holding on here.
Yep.
I'm holding on. And like, I held on for when they came to watch me. I went on my fly down, which for me, I'm like, thank God I can have like a few days off kind of thing. And they offered me a scholarship. And, you know, for me, like, I mean, I did it and then I shut it down. I didn't play. Like, if you look at my stats,
yep,
I stopped the next day. I could barely move.
The moment you had the scholarship,
I stopped playing.
And see, that's where it shows, yeah, the common sense is still there as well. It's
like
you were this.
No, like,
you know.
Yeah, I physically, I don't know how long I would have held on for. Like, my body was clearly fighting back.
Yeah.
Like, what are you doing? But like, again, I was willing to die. It wasn't an option to not get that, which was super empowering. And like, it was life changing. So that took me to Brown, and I dealt with the doctors. The thing is, they were right. They were, but they also like, for me, I'm like, you can't tell me what I'm capable of.
Yeah.
Right. Like, you're right. From a recovery standpoint, I dealt with it in my freshman year at Brown.
Yep.
So it was actually like, I remember laughing about it when I got to Brown. I'm like, fucking guys, they were right. Like, I still dealt with some of the stiffness and this pelvis issue I had, this imbalance. And I had to wear this bodysuit for 2 years for scarring. And
yeah,
they were right about a lot of things, but they weren't right about what, like,
the limitations
of, like, you can't do that.
Yeah.
I'm like, I'm not like everyone else you've seen. So why am I like that?
Well, you got them rewriting the book as to what's possible, which is beautiful. You taught them some things.
Well, they don't, I left and that was probably all they knew of me. Right. I don't know, but maybe not.
I don't know if I'm that doctor and I'm a Canucks fan. And a couple years later, it's like, what the hell?
Well, for the record, they never said you can't.
Right.
Or I might've said that you can't. They basically just said, maybe in a few years, let's just focus on getting better. Yeah. I knew in their head that's what they said or thought.
Of course.
You know, but so anyways, that took me to Brown.
You go to Brown. Yeah. You get your degree in, were you staying a science to got
human biology.
Guy? Human biology. Okay.
Well, it's funny. Like when I went there, everyone took business and economics or whatever. And that's what I, assumed I should do.
Yeah.
And we had a good mentor program there. And I remember talking to my guy. Again, pro hockey wasn't on my radar. I was going to play hockey for 4 years and go to work wherever.
Yeah.
Right. And so I remember talking to him. He worked in New York and he said, take what you like, because, you know, as we probably all know, it's who you know.
Yep.
And the degree, you know, take what you like, because he's like, I know the most successful people have degrees in things you wouldn't even know. Like, maybe geology. I'm not saying there's anything wrong with these degrees.
No, but it's off the beaten trail.
I work with people in Wall Street that have degrees in history, geology. Like, it really doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Unless you want to be a doctor.
Yeah.
You need to go to medical school.
Yeah, you're going to become something.
You could do. Yeah, exactly.
You want to become a teacher, become a geologist.
So I was really thankful I had that conversation, because I really wasn't planning on taking pre-med, basically, is what I took. Didn't make the student athlete balance any easier, but
yeah, I can imagine.
But again, I was
labs
thankful,
and all
so,
sorts of
yeah,
fun
labs,
stuff.
And
yeah.
So, yeah. But I took that, and I was thankful that, you know, I took what I wanted to take. So,
played hockey along the way. Were you the guy that skated well and put the fear of God into Ivy League defenders?
Yeah, and that's about it for the first 3 years. But you know, it's funny, and like I talk about this in my book, and everyone I talk to really, but you know, when I got to Brown, like my perspective on life had changed from this accident, and I kind of like patted myself on the back, like, yeah, we did it. Like, but that was kind of it. I didn't think what's next.
Yeah.
I just really like lived in that moment, and there's nothing wrong with that. I think it's good to be present, obviously. But I just had fun, man. Like I went to college. I worked my ass off.
Yep.
You know, I was like, won the fitness testing most years. Like I was a machine. But I partied, I had fun. Like I was just there to experience and live it all, take it all in. Right. Mm-hmm. And I really lost that purpose, I would say. Right. Like, but I didn't.
Experience lost the purpose, because the experience, right. It's easy to get caught up in the experience, whatever it is we're doing in life. Isn't it?
I did that was my NHL.
Yeah.
That scholarship was my NHL. And I'm like, I've reached the top.
So what you visualized came to pass.
Right.
And you didn't bridge that visualization with what the next one was at that time.
I didn't know any better. I was young. I was like,
okay, but you get a degree and then you walk on to training camp at the Vancouver Canucks. Is that what happened?
So I had another epiphany is really what happened.
Okay.
Yeah. It's funny. Like I've had two moments in my life, three actually now, because the book and what I'm doing now is another one.
Awesome.
But I had two before that. One was in that burn unit in the hospital. I got that call.
Yep.
And the other one was after my junior year at Brown. So I go through my first 3 years at Brown, like I just told you.
Yep.
Having fun, not a care in the world. Life was great. But again, I lost that purpose. I was taking pre-med. I was like, I'll go whatever, stay involved in sports or go be a doctor maybe if I, you know, really want to go down that road kind of thing. But that was it. And one of our assistant coaches came up to me after our season ended at Brown, and he pulled me aside and we started chatting. He's like, you ever thought about playing pro hockey? I was like, no. I laughed. Like, no, I'm 24 years old.
Yeah.
Like pro hockey? No.
Yeah.
And he's like, there's some teams asking about you, like in the East Coast League, in the AHL. And I thought, wow, really? And he's like, yeah, he's like, I really think, you know, the way you hit and skate, like if you really just added that other element, like some of the offense, like I think I had 10 points in college, you play 30 something games, right?
Yeah.
So I wasn't a plug.
No.
By any means.
No, like, no. But you also weren't a special teams guy. You weren't on the power play. You weren't
I penalty killed by my third year.
Yep.
Yeah. I wasn't a goal scorer.
Yeah.
Right. I wasn't that good, but I could hit. Right. And that's like what I said. So, he just like, I really think you could have a really good career for yourself if you add that game. Like not many guys can do all of those things. You got to get work on your skills and your, and all that stuff. Right. So again, I went home that night. And I started thinking and I'm like, man, if I can overcome that burn injury, and it's like, whatever, I didn't even think about that for the last 3 years. Like what an idiot, you know, but you're young and you don't know any better. Right. No. So again, I made a choice that night. I'm like, I'm going to go play in the NHL.
Oh my God.
Like watch. Why not?
Yeah.
Like if I can do that, like this seems to pale in comparison to that. And so again, I made a choice and then I got back to the visualization stuff.
Okay.
Right. Because I lost that. I really did. And it was so powerful. It proved true both times. So that senior year at Brown, I went from at 24 years old, no one in the NHL knowing who I was.
Yes.
To, you know, towards the end of that season, probably a top three, top five player in the NCAA, the
whole
country. And like I had contract offers from like six teams. I was talking to like 12 teams. Like, and people just...
You didn't have an agent before then?
No. No, I got hooked up with an agent during that last year.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah. I'm certain yeah. That would have...
So for me, as soon as I made that choice, I called my parents. I'm like, I'm not coming home this summer. I stayed out there. I lived with two other guys in one room so we could save some money. And
trained?
I trained. Lived... I just lived that purpose and that again with like, I really resonated with the Beatles story because it's like this all came together during this one time. And for me, that was like the grand masterpiece for me all came together when I was just almost 25 years old, but it's everything that had led up to that point, the burn, getting to Brown. And then this choice I made when I was 24, I stayed there. Like my days where I would get up in the morning, I'd go run hill sprints or I'd go for like a 5-10 mile run.
Yeah.
And then I would, you know, go eat. And then I would be at the rink and I'd be visualizing a lot, like for half an hour long. And just like, you want to talk about manifestation.
Yeah.
I'm like, there's no other option for me here. Like I'm shooting here. And if I land here, well, then I'm going to shoot here after that. Like it's just not an option. Right. Yeah.
Absolutely.
So people think like they look at my stats, they're like, well, you really figured it out or you got lucky that year. Like, no, there was a lot more.
You busted your ass to get there.
Yeah,
and you knew where you wanted to go. You had a destination in mind and you busted your ass to get to that destination.
And I would work on those skills.
Yeah.
Like every day. And once August came around that summer and the ice went in, that coach, I'm like, can you come work with me? So we'd go out there for a couple hours and work on things I needed to work on. And in the process, I put on like 15, 20 pounds.
Yep.
And, you know, I was 25 years old almost. Like I was a man now. And
yeah.
These 18-year-old kids were coming in. Like I was hurting guys.
Yep.
And I don't ever want to like add. I'm not trying to hurt guys.
No. But
it was
part of. It ain't ballet though.
It was part. It was part of the deal.
Yeah.
Like you're in my way.
Yeah.
You know, and.
And that's who you are.
And I had almost a point a game that.
Wow.
That last year. And I, again, so.
Oh, as a hockey fan, I hear that. It's like, okay, the big hit, which led to that lead pass, which, you know, they went and scored the goal because you get that big hit, took the puck away and passed it up to the, like, that's all I'm thinking about when you're saying that, because the heavy hitters, I'm a big LA Kings fan. You know, we got a guy by the name of Dustin Brown. That's the kind of game he plays.
Totally.
He smacks guys around to create the opportunity for offense. And it sounds like you were creating opportunity on the game and changing the way the game is, momentum and all of that shit.
Yeah. You make stuff happen. And that's what gets you noticed. Right. And so that's where I got to. And it's so crazy that like you said, the power of that choice and the manifestation. And like, for me, it proved true twice. And like, I really was never supposed to make it to the NHL. I really wasn't. Like, I grew up, I played house hockey at 15.
Yeah.
Like, I work with these kids young now and go talk to these teams and academies and like, oh, I didn't get drafted to the Bantam draft. I'm like, dude, you're way better than I was.
Yeah.
And I played house hockey. Like, and it's never too late. You're not in a rush, right? And people are always in a rush. Oh, I didn't get drafted and my career's over. It's like, no. You don't know that.
Yeah.
Right. So
if that's the decision you're making, and that's right. How many times do we accidentally fuck ourselves up by saying things like that?
Totally.
Like, oh, my career's over now. Okay.
Yeah. Like, well, you don't think,
you know?
Yeah. People, and you didn't think I had doubts in that recovery. Mm-hmm. Right. So it's really like you have to make that choice every day. And that's the hard part. I can't remember this book I read, but it said something around like, The obsession is easy.
Yeah.
It's easy to get obsessed, but it's really fucking hard to stay and sustain that obsession.
Yeah.
And to do what you need to do to get to where you want to say you want to go. Like, that might take years of grinding.
Yes.
And most people can't do that because, you know, it breaks you down. And you got, man. But if your purpose is strong enough, you make that choice every day. Right. And that's where I was at. So it was just so cool, like specifically with the visualization and how much, like, you want to talk about manifestation and purpose, like, man, that fueled me beyond like your wildest belief. Like, I can't even explain to you how much it just, I'm like, like you create this movie and then eventually in your head, it just starts becoming a reality in your default. And then you want to talk about like rolling over setbacks. Like, it just was like, you would think, you know, you have a bad game and you just eventually you're just like, okay, well, that wasn't me. Like, I'm going here, a little blip.
Yeah.
Right. So.
And how important is it to make sure you keep that end goal on the forefront of your mind? You know, there's so many men need to hear this. I think about where Candy, where my wife is going with this whole company. She wants to change the world. Literally, she wants to change the world. Her and her team literally want to make the world a better place. That is what they want to do. It's a massive, massive, massive goal. And whenever they get stuck in the weeds, you know, little thing. Oh, you know, your startup funding. That's a big one. The right people doing the right things. That's another one. You know, are we putting in the right features at the right times? Like, there's all sorts
of reasons to quit, right?
Reasons to quit, but also times to just get in the fucking weeds about things.
Right.
But then when you go back to that original purpose, no, we want to change the world. That adds that fuel back in.
Absolutely.
When you're in the weeds to that, you know, and that's just so, it's so important to do that.
Yeah.
And to just keep your eye on that prize. Yeah. Men need to hear that. So many men need to hear that because they put their heads down many times and they don't look up.
Yeah.
And if you don't look up, you're going to just bore into a rock at some point. You know, that's just what's going to happen.
Yeah. You got to know where you're going. Right. And, I really like your point of it. It brings that full circle back to, okay, why did you make that choice today? Well, that's why.
Yeah.
Right. Like, I think you're bang on with that.
Yeah. I hate how slippery time is here, but it is. So okay, I got to ask this question because I'll fast forward the story just a little bit for the narrative for the audience. You know, you're playing in the AHL. You know, you kind of you walk on, you do a kind of a walk on, and you end up playing in the AHL for the Manitoba Moose.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's Vancouver Canucks farm team.
Yeah.
Did you choose sentimentality? Did sentimentality, was that a part of the choice as to why you went where you went? Or was did it just end up that the team that you loved as a kid were one of the teams that were interested in you?
Isn't it funny how it works?
So funny how it works.
Yeah, there was, I mean, it was mostly, to be honest, like financial. Like their deal was a lot better than any of my other ones.
Great.
I had no money. I just came out of college.
Yeah.
And, you know, I also wasn't like, again, that where I came from, I'm like, I don't know how long is my career going to last? Like, I, you know, I'm going in here. I want to make some money while I can.
Yep.
So that was part of it.
And that's okay, by the way. It's okay to go for feeds your family better sometimes.
But I mean, the fact that it was Vancouver, like, that's pretty cool, man.
That's
like,
rad.
So those were the big parts of it. I'll never forget, my parents didn't believe me, which was a great part of the story. Like, because I never told them. Because again, like, I wasn't supposed to. So no one, when I started gaining that traction, mm-hmm. I really kind of kept it to myself, and they knew I was having a good year, obviously, and that I was talking to some like pro teams.
Yeah.
So I never forget when I signed, I called them and I said, you know, I was telling you, I was like talking with some pro teams, and they said, yeah. I was like, well, like I was talking with NHL teams, and my dad was like, well, he's like, fuck off. Like, like, and no, I'm like, dad, I'm serious. Like, I just signed with Vancouver for 2 years, and there's just silence. And he's like, like, oh, okay, stop messing around here. Like, yeah. What? I'm like, seriously, like, you probably go look it up. And he's like, holy shit. So that was pretty cool. They didn't believe me at first.
Out of left field.
It was really out of left field. Yeah. Yeah. So,
I got to ask this question, and then I want to get to what you're doing now. It's really important. And the book, which isn't out yet, so we'll make sure we have you on again for when the book comes out, yeah, so you can do it as a publicity for the book as well. But great, yeah. But I got to ask this question. What did it feel the first time that you were in the Vancouver locker room with a jersey with your name on it and you were going to go play as a Vancouver Canuck? What did that feel like to you? Were you in the moment? Were you able to be present at that moment? Or is it only reflection that kind of is able to lead to this answer?
Oh, that's such a good question and a tough question, but I can't even explain to you what it felt like. There was a lot of pride there. Mm-hmm. But to your point with reflection, like it was hard for me to stay in that moment because of where I'd been, where I'd gone and what I'd been through. Like most people don't, and even my best friends didn't know, like they knew I got burnt and I had to recover, but most people, and that was part me like getting vulnerable and like sharing the whole story.
Yeah.
Was a big part of like the book and all these things afterwards. But yeah, man, it was, I don't know. I can't even explain it. Like it's hard to put words to it, but there's so much pride of, I'm like, holy shit. Like I did that when like I was told I couldn't, essentially.
Yeah.
And you know, like a little kid from Revelstoke, like without any of that shit that had happened,
yeah,
would have been a long shot.
Yeah,
right. And that's what I tell anyone now. I'm like, if I really mean it, like if I can make it, like you can do anything you want. Mm-hmm. So yeah,
it's, hear that, guys? You can do anything you want.
You really can. So I would say pride was probably the biggest emotion I had with that, and just enjoying it with my family, because like, man, like I have a son now. I can't imagine getting that call that my parents got at 1 a.m. night when I was burnt and no one knew how serious it really was. Like just sharing that moment with them and like, holy shit. Like you did it. Like,
man,
it's pretty cool. So pride, I would say, would be the biggest.
It was magical.
It was so cool.
Yeah.
And just seeing like, I'm like, I'm on the ice with the Sedins and like,
yes,
all these guys, man. It was pretty cool.
Oh man. Okay. Well, maybe, you know, maybe the next time we do this, we'll go down that path a little bit more, because I want to really focus. By the way, go to AaronVolpatti.com if you want to check out where things are at. You talk about converging. You've got a whole bunch of things that are converging together right now. You got a book, your speaking engagements, but your coaching practice. I want to ask you about that, because I mean, at the end of the day, I know you didn't end up for it to be going to where kids are, but at the end of the day, you've kind of gone down this path with this coaching practice. Did you want to be a life coach? Did you want to be an athletic coach? Did you want to be like, as you started going down this personal development path, did you know where you wanted to go? Or have you just of surrendered to the idea of walking down the path and seeing what comes?
Yeah. No, is the short answer. I didn't know that. Like we chatted before we went live here, like life didn't, which is maybe crazy, like what we've talked about so far, but life for me didn't get real till after I retired. I had that injury that, you know, I was 30 years old. Like you want to talk about loss of identity. It's like now what?
Well, again, this has got echoes to it. You didn't have that next step. You were still enjoying the experience.
So, and I went through all that, same thing to my first few years at Brown. Like I went through all of that again after I retired. Like I lost that purpose. I didn't have that identity. I was going through a divorce, which is never easy, obviously. Had a kid, like talk about like death, family disease, like all these things. And they just hit at the same time, one after another. And I was like, you don't talk about in a dark place. That was the darkest place I'd been. Like the physical adversity, like with the burn and the, you know, the training for the NHL, that was shit I could, you know, really harness. But this was stuff like, you know, you don't have control over some of it. And it's the mental side where it's not manifesting as like physical pain necessarily.
Yeah.
But yeah, like I went to a dark place there. So I got to a point right when I was going through a divorce. I was working in wealth management at the time.
Yep.
So after I retired, you kick these doors open. You're like, I don't know what my purpose is, but I know it's out there because I've already been through it.
Yep.
So that's really what honestly like saved me was knowing it was there. Mm-hmm. I didn't know what it was. So I kicked these doors open. I worked in wealth management and I didn't love it. And, you know, I had the wherewithal to, I'd obviously set myself up enough that I could chase that purpose a little bit with some freedom to chill for a few months if I had to, but you know, kick that door open. I kicked out a few other doors open of different business ventures and they fell through and then COVID hit.
Yeah.
And this book was always a side project. So I'm like, okay, now's the time.
Yeah, I got a good time to,
here's the, yep. Now's the time to do it. So yep. I did this book. And then again, when I said that third kind of epiphany halfway through, cause it was strictly a memoir because everyone's like, man, you need to write a book.
Absolutely.
The story. Yeah. Cause it is a really good story. And the shit that I've been through is pretty crazy. And so I wrote this memoir style book. And then about halfway through, especially going into like, you know, the visualization and I'm like, man, this is what I need to do. And this is what I need to teach people what I've learned through the experiences. And then the books. So now I've had to go back and change the book a little bit to bring that element into it.
Yep.
And then I'm like, yeah, I need to start teaching people this. So I started my coaching business and yeah, it's funny. Like you just never know where life's going to go and it's been great. And I'm really busy with it. But to your point now it's gotten my people I'm working with are getting younger and younger. When I started, it was strictly like performance based, which it is still.
Yep.
But more people that came to me, I started hearing the same things like anxiety, like performance anxiety, confidence issues, especially with like we all have confidence issues, but it's starting at such a young age now, which I'm like, holy shit, this is a huge problem. And I had no idea it was that big of a problem.
Yeah.
Like we didn't grow up. I mean, at least I didn't. I didn't have anxiety and stress at 13. I was just a kid.
No.
But it's not like that anymore.
No.
And so I have gotten like younger, but I mean, I work with older, you know, clients as well.
Yeah.
But really just like flipping the switch on like, what's the purpose here? And like, why do you want to instilling like the belief system of like, shoot here, because, you know, if you're shooting here, you're selling yourself short. And there's always like that seed of doubt that people have.
Yeah.
And that stems with, then that's what triggers some of this, you know, these performance anxieties where if I make a mistake, like, oh, I'm not going to get drafted to the Bantam draft. Draft, and oh, my parents have invested all this money, or you know, I'm on my Instagram and like, look what all these guys are doing. And the pressures are from all over the place.
Yep.
And if you can just take a minute and you know think about that belief and knowing you can get there, and just I don't know, man. Like it's. Just taking a moment and being like, you make a mistake and it's like, that's not me. Like just have a moment and
it's not your identity.
Also okay.
Yeah.
And you need to fail and you need to go through that shit. And that's part of it is it's an easier world, I think now. And people don't know how to handle the adversity and the tough times. Right.
Yeah.
And you're always learning. So you got to frame it as a learning opportunity, not, oh, my life's over because I made a bad game or, you know, well, so just voicing that to the kids alone, they're like, oh,
okay. Do you talk to kids about purpose?
Oh yeah. That's
finding your purpose.
Well, so in my program, that's a big part of one of the weeks.
It's not just identifying the goal. It's also identifying the purpose inside.
Oh, it's mostly that.
Oh,
yeah.
Wow.
It's like the process. Right. So, I mean, my whole thing is what I teach is like a story work visualization, like, this is your life. Here's where you are. This is where you want to go. Let's write the movie for Mike's life.
Yeah.
And let's live it every day and make the choice every day. And then you add layers every week and you visualize it every day. And, you know, there's a lot of power there. You start changing those networks in your brain, right? And that's a thing. And that's what people don't realize. It's not some voodoo.
No, shit. Subconscious pathways are there's a real biology thing. Here. Absolutely.
I listened to the audiobook of Bruce Lipton. I don't know if you heard Biology of Belief.
I haven't read and it. Yeah.
I'm like, this is literally proving what I've gone through and yes. what I teach. It's pretty cool.
I'm a Joe Dispenza guy. So, and Joe is able to do that same thing. And the Lipton book is one that it's on my list.
Yeah.
Both. Because I love the idea that it feels like it's woo-hoo-hoo-hoo, because it does. It feels so good and warm and everything. Like, I love the feelings that come with it.
Yeah.
But it's all based in biology.
Yeah.
All of it. Those subconscious pathways that are totally. Back there. You know, I forget which book I read that used this as the example. But, like, if you're on a computer, right, and you're interfacing with the computer right now and you're seeing what's on the monitor coming back to you, that's like a teeny tiny percentage of what is going on with that computer now.
Right.
The smallest teeny tiny part. What you and I are doing right now, that is the smallest part of what's going on in our brain right now.
Absolutely.
The stuff in the background, sometimes you got to reformat your hard drive, and you can do that with your subconscious pathways.
Right. And I didn't even know. I'm like, man, that's what I did. I didn't even know really until I went to Brown. So that was the cool thing, is I started learning about this when I went to Brown, and I was like, man, that's so cool that I learned like what I had been through and started doing. Right. And because I think, like, what do they say? The conscious brain is like 7-8% or something. It's not
very
much.
Small.
And these subconscious things. And that's what really, like, voicing to these people, like, especially, like I said, the younger kids now, like, there's nothing wrong with you. Like, we all have these limiting beliefs.
Yep.
They're back there. They're wired. And you can't do anything about that. Can't do anything about why.
No. Maybe that childhood happened. Childhood trauma is childhood trauma. Whatever it is. It got you there, right?
Right.
But you can do something about it.
Yeah.
If you have that awareness.
Right. Yeah. And that's the hard thing, is like, have that awareness and then explore that purpose. Right. And then the more you think about that in a day and override some of those, you know, default negative pathways, well, then you start changing things and then you notice a difference. And then like, you don't know it, but then their biology starts changing.
Exactly.
And then you're like, oh man, I feel really fucking good.
Yes.
And then it's like a snowball effect. And that's like, I experienced that with my senior year at Brown, and not only physical performance, but man, you want to talk about confidence. I was like, I was up here with that. And I went into games knowing I was going to be successful, and that didn't come easy. Right. And
so,
I think, I mean, we're on the same wavelength there with manifestation. It's not voodoo. It's you really changing those pathways in your brain. And right.
Well, you know what? And hey, everybody out there, take the energy part of it, leave the energy part of it. We don't even have to go down the energy part of it if that's there, whatever. But here's the thing. If something comes up in your head where, you know, something good is happening, and then suddenly you're reminded of a painful memory or something is there to stop, you can actually stop there and say, okay, brain, thank you very much for bringing up this warning or whatever it was, but I'm going to take that. I'm going to cut a cord to it, release it, because I like just thinking about the good stuff that's going on. Don't worry about this memory that you brought up. I'm going to let it go. And there is a biological thing happening when you do that. Yeah. And the more you do that, the less those memories pop up, and our brain does that, right? It's just us training our subconscious mind.
Every day there's like that battle going on of the negative and the positive thoughts, right? You're not going to get rid of those negative thoughts. Like, they're always going to be there.
No, but you can make them your bitch, though.
You totally can. That's exactly what I was going to get at. Like, you can have this such a strong sense of purpose. And what I say, like, this is your movie or your life. Like, what do you want it to look like?
Yeah.
And believe that and start thinking about it every day. Because when you do that, like, you'll start noticing changes. And then it's going to snowball, and then you're going to look back however long, it might be a few months, it might be a few years, and be like, holy shit, like, I needed to go through that, because, like, what an opportunity.
Yep.
Right. So that's the biggest thing too, is we all go through hard times.
Yes.
And if you haven't, you will. And that's what I tell a lot of the young kids. I'm like, this is just the start, and I'm not trying to scare you.
No,
I'm trying to reframe it where it's not supposed to be easy. If it was, everyone would do it, right? So know that, and know that the adversities, it's okay. It's not going to feel like it in the moment, but you'll look back and I promise you, you'll be like, man, like, thank God that happened.
Every, you know, you say you do this with kids, and that's amazing because you can help them write these subconscious pathways along the way. Right. I mean, what a beautiful gift that is. But everyone I know needs to hear that message. Yeah. I need to hear that message from time to time when I get myself
every day.
Right.
You do.
And we do. And we have to do that. I hate that we have to end this, but we have to end this. So before we do, if people want to reach out to you, AaronvillePatty.com is the place to go. Right.
Yeah.
Under construction, lots of great things coming. The book isn't out yet, but as soon as it is, we'll sound our alarms sure to help you with that and to get that going. He Changed It really appreciates what it is that you're doing. Yeah. And speaking engagements, you're already open for that.
Yeah.
And the coaching is going on already. Do you do virtual stuff or is it all in person? Or
yeah, coaching's all virtual.
Well, there you go.
Yeah, so I'm working with people in the States and no one overseas yet, but you know, who knows where it can go. And it's been really rewarding. So I've really loved it. And it's, again, it's just making real change for people, which is really, really rewarding. So
as a guy who has come into this and been able to give kind of the big view to your life, I believe every single moment that you have talked about in this podcast and the ones that we haven't talked about, everything is connected and all of these things are about to come together in a beautiful puzzle for you. Totally. And it is wonderful watching it. Can't wait to, you know, support it, be a part of it, partner with you on it, whatever it is that we can do to help you grow this thing. He Changed It with you on that. So thank you for doing what you do. You love what it is that we're doing too with the, you didn't hesitate the moment you heard about what it is that we're doing. And you didn't hesitate to come on here with enthusiasm, even though you didn't even know what was going on in the project. So,
I'd say, I mean, ditto to you guys. I mean, I'd love to be a part of what you guys got going on. And I mean, it's such an important piece to men's health and awareness of, you know, it's okay for us to have feelings and explore that and be vulnerable. And you talk about purpose, right? Yeah. All these things where that's all out there.
Yep.
And, you know, and it's not supposed to be easy, and that's okay. And I think what you guys are doing is awesome. And yeah, like I hope we can obviously stay in touch and work together or whatever, right? But yeah, it's been awesome. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Thank you so much. They go by so quickly. That was a little bit longer than what we normally do, but I think y'all will be okay with that. I know I certainly am. Go to AaronvillePatty.com if you want to check out what he's got going on. We'll throw it out through our social channels and get all that happening, all that fun stuff that I don't have to worry about. I can just have these amazing conversations. That's been another episode of HeCast. Thank you very much for supporting us. We appreciate it. Once again, I'll bookend this thing by going, if you haven't downloaded the app, what the heck are you waiting for? Go to HeChangedIt.com if you want any info, or search He Changed It in your app store. Find the He app, grab it, subscribe, like the podcast, all of that stuff. My name is Mike Chisholm. Thank you very much. I am the host of HeCast, the official podcast of He Changed It. Go change something.